This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
This is DCR.
Friday Night Lights. I won't have a nervous breakdown when I watch the football scenes of Friday Night Lights.
Army's offensive line is being done.
It's first and 10 from the 27. The announcer's like, they picked up 18, and now it's first and 10 from the 29.
Winchell is driven hard to the
How did you do this?
It's not great.
Did they not talk to anybody that knew anything about the game of football when they filmed this movie? And it's such a good movie, and the football scenes are so bad.
This is DCR.
Basketball is back.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Well, we got one for Canty, the big 7 o'clock hour. DCR 98.7 ESPN basketball is back. DCR 98.7 ESPN presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests on DCR peer via the Goodyear hotline. Let's go right to the hotline, Rick. Let's bring in NFL draft scout, NFL draft expert, Matt Miller. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Doing well, guys. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. So here's what I want to know, and I don't know if everyone does it the same or not. When you do a mock draft, do you do it on what you think should and will happen, or do you do it on what you think will, in fact, happen with these teams?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I try to preface this at the top of every mock draft article that I write. Basically, my thinking is a mock draft is a prediction of what will happen, so it's based on what I'm hearing from sources around the NFL. It's based on, you know, conversations with other people in the media who are more, you know, information gatherers. It's based on conversations even with agents who say, like, yeah, here my guy's going to go in this range, and you try to connect all those dots. And so with mock drafts, I try to bring all the information to the table, because I look at that as people want that prediction of what's going to happen, what should happen. Every now and then I'll throw one of those out of, like, okay, if I was a New York Jets to pick number two, I would select Justin Fields. Here's why. What I think will happen is that they will draft Zach Wilson. So you try to differentiate between the two, but it is difficult, and everyone wants those mock drafts. There's an insatiable need for them, and I look at it as people want to know what's going to happen on April 29th.
So, Matt, I mean, you're not the only one. There are plenty of people I listen to that say that, I mean, Justin Fields is the second-best quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence, and it's actually the gap isn't crazy big. Like Justin Fields, talent-wise and everything else, upside is right there. But it doesn't seem like everyone agrees with that. What's going on with Justin Fields?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question right now that no one really has an answer to. And I think that's why you're hearing so many of us talk about it, because it is confusing to we're in that time of year where you're finalizing your tape study. And like with Justin Fields, I've been done for a while, but I know a lot of my colleagues are getting caught up coming off of other assignments. And so you watch Justin Fields and you're like, hey, why aren't more and more people talking about this guy? He's really, really good. And then you see the pro day workout, which was exceptional. So like, if we're going to put stock in pro days, his was the best that I've seen so far this year. And then you look at the athleticism. And I think this is where I have a hard time with Justin Fields, is we hear about, you know, Zach Wilson, and I really like Zach Wilson. He's a good quarterback. You hear about Trey Lance. And even with Mac Jones, and the one thing that people say about them is their potential. You know, oh, if Mac Jones gets in Kyle Shanahan's scheme, or, oh my gosh, Zach Wilson with his ability to play off-platform and be creative. But we don't, or people aren't giving Justin Fields the same, like, leeway of potential, basically, which is crazy to me, because he's has the strongest arm, he's the most athletic. And so if we're betting on potential, and I've said this before, if we're betting on potential, give me the strongest arm, the most athletic, and the guy who played 2 years in the Big Ten and didn't lose a game in conference. And again, not to you know, put Zach Wilson down or Trey Lance down or Mac Jones down. Trey Lance and Mac Jones started 17 games in college. That is a shockingly low number. There are very few quarterbacks in the NFL who have had success starting less than 20 games. It's not a pretty list. And, you know, with Zach Wilson, we have to really figure out, was 2020 the Zach Wilson that you're going to get, or was 2019 the Zach Wilson you're going to get? So to me, it feels like Justin Fields has the highest potential and the fewest question marks. And yet he's being talked about as he might be the fifth quarterback drafted, which I think is a mistake, but NFL teams are going to do what they do.
All right. So Matt, it feels like we know the Jets are going to take Wilson at two. But how do you, and I want your opinion and not what you think the Jets or whoever's going to do at two, how do you have the quarterbacks ranked in order?
Yeah, I have it Trevor Lawrence, then a nice little gap. actually have Justin Fields and Zach Wilson ranked right beside each other. I put Fields over Wilson again because of the arm talent, the athleticism, and because there are fewer questions. I feel like scouting is trying to figure out what a guy can do and what questions do you have that you can't get answered. And I think with Zach Wilson, there are more questions that I can't get answered based on level of competition, the jump from 2019 to 2020. I think they're very close, though. Then I have it Trey Lance and then Mac Jones. And I'll be honest, I have Mac Jones in the number, like the 20s overall, like 25 overall. Those other four quarterbacks I have in the top 10. So I think the top four that we were talking about back in December are still really, really good. And then we've kind of had this Mac Jones meteoric rise from being a, that might be nice, like a nice late first round, early second round pick to now the number three overall pick. It's been pretty wild to watch.
See, that's what's amazing to me, Matt. Mac Jones is, he's a good quarterback. But for Kyle Shanahan to trade, I mean, two extra first round picks to move all the way up to three. I get Mac Jones, you know, reminds people of, you know, Matt Ryan and Kirk Cousins, and he'd fit well in the system. But if you're going to move up and give away that much draft equity, I mean, wouldn't you want someone that has more upside than a Mac Jones?
Yeah, that's what I would want, right? And to look at where the NFL is going, and I've tried looking at this from every different way because I don't want to follow the groupthink and be like, well, Adam Schefter says it's going to be Mac Jones, and you know Daniel Jeremiah says it's going to be Mac Jones, so I better get in line with those. I don't like to be that guy. I try to be discerning when it comes to this work. And you try to look at it from all these different angles. And the problem is that everyone you talk to says, yeah, it's going to be Mac Jones. And so you just, at some point, if enough people tell you something, you say, okay, I think this is going to happen. And I would think that looking at where the NFL is going, you would want someone with more athletic ability, you know, especially in San Francisco where you have such a good defense and you know that you can scheme up a run game. Wouldn't you want a quarterback who can kind of take games over and beat teams a couple different ways with his arm and his legs? And you look at, they've lost to Patrick Mahomes. They got beaten down by Josh Allen. They have to deal with Russell Wilson. They have to deal with Kyler Murray. You would think that you would want a dynamic quarterback having had those experiences. But I think this will be an interesting tell of, does Kyle Shanahan believe so much in his system that he's going to get the perfect fit for it? And I do think Mac Jones is a very good fit for his system, as opposed to taking this opportunity to evolve that scheme and modernize it. You know, this is a very complex scheme. It's a very beautiful scheme, but we've never seen it really operated with somebody who can move out of the pocket as a runner. So I think we'll know April 29th if Kyle is going to be kind of stubborn with, the rigidness of the scheme, or if he's going to, open things up and try something new.
Matt Miller with us, NFL Draft Scout on 98.7 ESPN. Let me ask you about the Giants. If the Giants were to take an edge rusher at 11, because a lot of people think they're going to take, now the kid from Georgia is a name that's popping up, or Hay out of Michigan. Do you, is that a mistake? Like, are you reaching for an edge rusher if you take him at 11 in this draft?
Maybe. I think the biggest thing is, so the Giants don't need a quarterback, so we could take those five guys out of the conversation. We drafted really well last year for a left tackle, so you could almost take Penei Sewell from Oregon and Rashawn Slater from Northwestern out of the conversation. So if you take those seven guys out, and the top pass catchers are off the board, Kyle Pitts from Florida will be gone, Jamar Chase will be gone. So you get to a point where you're looking at who are the best players available at a position of need. And we could be looking at Quiddy Pay from Michigan, Jalen Phillips from the University of Miami. You mentioned Azeez Ojulari from Georgia. You could actually be looking at one of those players, as they might not be the number one guy on my board or Mel Kiper's board when the number 11 pick comes around, but they might be the number one player at a position of need. And so I think that's a way that Giants fans have to look at this is, okay, Jalen Phillips might be the number 15 player on my board. Well, 15 to 11 is not a huge jump, but if players 11, 12, 13, 14 are not at a need, then you could understand Dave Gettleman saying, okay, with pass rush is still one of the four most important positions on the field. We've got to get better there, even if it's a tiny reach. No one's going to remember that we reached for a player if he produces at our biggest area of need. So I think that is something where, whether it's Pay or Phillips, I like both of those players a lot. If they select them over Jalen Waddle, I don't think that's egregious. Like, draft analysts aren't going to give you an F for making that pick. And, to be quite honest, I will throw myself at the front of this line. We have not been very good at analyzing Dave Gettleman's drafts. A lot of people, myself included, thought Daniel Jones was a reach. He's played well. Last year, Andrew Thomas was not the consensus top tackle. A lot of people thought They could have traded back and still got him. Turns out he played exceptionally well as a rookie. So Gettleman has been a little bit smarter than his critics in understanding value and understanding what his team needs. And so I think he's earned a little bit of leverage this year to add 11 if they get a pass rusher. You really got to wait and see, because a lot of his moves, you know, Leonard Williams, Dexter Lawrence, a lot of those moves have panned out when there were many, many critics of them beforehand.
Yeah, because Dave Gettleman's the smartest guy in the room, and he's going to tell you that. He's wicked smart.
I was trying to work that in, you know. But
no, you could have. Listen, it's not a tough accent. And Dave puts a little extra on it, too. I'm not even convinced he's really from that area. Matt, what are the deepest position groups in this year's draft?
Oh, man, I think so running back and wide receiver have just become always deep position groups, right? So we know those are always going to be deep. I think offensive tackle is really deep this year. You know, and there's going to be Penei Sewell, Rashawn Slater drafted in the top 12 picks, but then there's really good depth, you know, throughout the first round, second round. I think you're looking at maybe even starting caliber players in the third round. On the defensive side, it's a really deep year for linebackers. It's a really deep year for safeties. I think corner is pretty good. So unfortunately, you know, for Giants fans, this is kind of a weaker year at defensive end. It's a weaker year at defensive tackle. It's a weaker year at tight end. So some positions, it almost feels cyclical with them, but you would really like if this draft had a deeper front four position groups, it would be going down as a much better draft class overall than it is.
All right, Matt, listen, we appreciate it. We're 3 weeks from today, so we're down to not too much time. Let's talk again before we get to April 29th, and great stuff as always. We appreciate the insight.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Very, very good. All right, there you have Matt Miller. I love the draft.
I love it.
I could talk nonstop draft.
I mean, you're texting me to stop. I have like 57 more questions.
Well, just because I know he has other stuff to do.
You know what I would love?
I don't want to keep him forever.
You know what I would love to see? If they actually let like a handful of guys, like a McShay, a Kuiper, Matt, like just five guys.
Right.
Like or each network picks their one draft expert and actually allows the draft expert to sit down with the draft picks. And then see what their mock drafts look like, and see if it would be closer to what you actually
when you sit down and talk to these kids.
Yeah, because I don't understand. Like it's such, the opinions are so different. Mm-hmm. They're watching the same tape, and you see especially the quarterback position, what a crapshoot it is.
Yeah, well, think about it. I mean, the Giants took I mean, pretty much the consensus. I don't know, third or fourth tackle last year. And they took fourth overall.
But it's what you prioritize, right?
Well, that's right. Well, I think that makes to your point.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
I didn't want to call Matt Miller out. But when he was going through the Giants picks and saying Daniel Jones, they took him at 6 and he's been so good, and then they took Andrew Thomas at 4, and he had a great rookie year. I was thinking to myself, what? I don't know that I agree with exactly what Matt is saying at this very moment.
Yeah, I just let him go. I think if you asked any Giants fan, they've been underwhelmed with those two picks.
Yes,
they believe that Daniel Jones,
Thomas.
Well, especially Thomas, but I think again, that was one of those situations where, you know, you had your choice of whichever offensive lineman you wanted, and for some reason they decided they wanted to go with Andrew Thomas.
And listen, Mike Tannenbaum loved him. And you can't tell me that he won't be good. I still think there's absolute hope that he's going to be a very good left tackle in this league for a very long time. But if I could redo it now, would I take Andrew Thomas over those other guys? No, I'd probably take him fourth of those four.
Yeah, but again, I mean, it's a tough situation for the young kid too, right?
I get it.
I mean, Nate Solder opts out, so yeah, I mean, your only option is to put him at left tackle in a pandemic year where there's no offseason programs or preseason games. So it's going to be tough regardless. And he was, listen, he struggled. But towards the end of the season, he started to figure it out a little bit.
Went on. Listen, I'm not saying that he won't be very good. I'm just saying right now, I think he was the fourth of four in his rookie year. Let's get back to the Yankees. Aaron Boone, I don't know, defensive or uncomfortable, whatever you want to say, when he was asked about Aaron Judge last night. But here's the back and forth with a couple of reporters and the Yankee skipper.
As an option?
I was staying away from him.
Did you have Judge available as an option?
I was staying away from him. Tonight.
When you say that you were staying away from Aaron Judge tonight, was there a further development with the soreness, with the side issue?
No further development. You know, I really didn't have any conversations during the game about it. So, you know, we'll I'll see, you know, what's kind of gone on over the last few hours. But, yeah, I was going to stay away from him today.
Aaron, just kind of keeping it with that theme, do you expect him to be in the lineup come Friday, or is it too early to make that determination?
Yeah, that's too early.
Something's wrong. I'm sorry. So something is very wrong with Aaron Judge, and I'm telling you right now, he's going to be on the IL come the weekend. I really believe that.
Well, that's what they're trying to avoid. I mean, and clearly, I mean, listen to those couple clips. I mean, some happened to Aaron Judge. He tweaked something. He doesn't feel great. And the last thing they want to do is push it 5 games into the season where he does end up, you know, a little tweak turns into he has a strained oblique and he's going to miss an extended period of time.
And they certainly don't want to tell us.
No, but this is not something that Aaron Boone wants to have to talk about every single day.
Well, you know what? This is what it is. This is probably the best or second best player on the team. This has been going on for years where he's hurt, and it's happened, and we're 6 games in now, 5 games where he missed last night, into the season, and it's already an issue. And it's the one thing. I say to you, Aaron Judge, now, you don't talk about his talent. You don't talk about his cannon in right field, the fact that he makes this offense go, the fact that he hits the ball as hard as anybody in baseball. The one thing you talk about, and rightfully so, is this guy is always hurt, Rick, and the narrative just gets worse now. It doesn't get better.
No, it doesn't. I mean, this is just, it only feeds the narrative that as great as he is, he can't stay on the field. So we can't get back to what we saw in 2017 when he should have won the MVP.
It's a long time ago now, though.
No, it is. But you're at a point now with you're the Yankees is you have to do whatever you can to make sure that you manage this the right way where you get him through this season and to the postseason when he's at 100%. Because that's when you need him the most.
But if you're right, but if that means he can play 97 games, I mean, am I going to give a guy a huge deal when I have to if he can't give me 140 games? Ever?
No, but I mean, age-wise too. You're not going to. I mean, you're not talking about a 10-year deal.
No. But am I going to give him a 6-year deal?
Well, here's the thing that would hold you up is, I think you'd like to. Because he's the captain of your team. I mean, that's what he is.
There's no doubt how great he is when he plays. No doubt.
But the only thing that would hold you back from doing it is he already has Stanton locked up on a long-term deal, making tons of money. So if you can't, again, the best way to keep Judge healthy is you'd have him in right field as much as possible because he's that good defensively. But also there'd be days where you still need the bat in the lineup, but you'd rather have him off his feet.
That's right. Give him the day off. Take a couple swings, you'll be our DH, and you'll get the day. But you really can't do that. And then when you do
but
it like you did the other night, people completely have meltdowns.
Well, yeah, because again, I mean, Stanton is already, you know, the guy people can't wait to boo if you're Yankees fans. And now all of a sudden, he's another guy that doesn't stay healthy. And this early on in the season, we have to give him a day off.
We're already here. Let's go to Dino in the Bronx. Good morning, Dino. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you? I just wanted a quick question. Do you think, like another team would possibly try to even entertain an offer, like to unload, Giancarlo, and you could offer them like Aaron Judge? I mean, you get rid of Judge, who's always injury prone, and
you're not going to trade
unload Giancarlo's contract.
No, you're not going to trade.
No, I'm saying
you're
trade them both
Judge and Stanton. No, and plus, okay. I mean, and the other thing, too, is that Stan's going to have to agree to wherever, I mean, you're trying
right,
to trade him
no
to.
Trade. You're going to package both of those guys in a deal? Come on.
Who's taking on that money now?
Nobody. And by the way,
with where baseball's at.
You're terrible. This whole proclamation early on, I'm going to take over the reins. When people call and they say, hey, how are you? That's going to be my role now. And the last two guys,
well,
hey,
he didn't
guys,
stop.
What's going on? And you say nothing. You just sit there.
Because he was getting right into what he wanted to say. He wasn't doing that. He was just saying it to say
guys,
he was
how
going.
Are you? He asked the question and you said nothing.
So no, because I know you'll get it. So.
Because he was going right into it. I wanted all to right. move it along. I want to take all these calls.
All right, then let's take another. Let's see if you can play the game properly here. Rex in Brooklyn. Good morning, Rex.
Yeah, I'm very concerned with Aaron Judge because not only has he not been healthy, but his production has dropped too since 2017. So. It's like it's scratching my head. Like I wonder, like if you guys have to ask yourself, like to put any significant amount of money, do you see Judge replicating his 2017 for the rest of his career anytime? Because I don't see it.
It's hard to see his production. I mean, you say his but you say his production's dropped. His production's dropped is because he's not playing enough. I mean, the guy, will he ever get back to 2017? That was a special season. I mean, he had 52 home runs. I don't know if he ever gets back to that, but I would have a hard time believing that if he plays 150 games, he's not going to hit close to 40 home runs.
Sure, but do you think he ever plays 150 games again?
The way this thing is trending, no. I mean, at this point, how could you comfortably say that's going to happen?
I mean, 2017, he played in like 155, yep. Right? And I think, I don't think he's played more than 120 since.
No, he's gone 155, 112, 102. He played 28 last year and now...
Of 60, so he played half the season.
And now going into
So he missed 50 games, he missed 60 games, he missed half the season, and now we don't know.
Yeah, but I think this is, again, I know people are going to react the way that they're reacting, but I think this is more just making sure it doesn't turn into something where he's going to miss a lot of time.
I agree. You can't have that happen. Although right now, if I was a Yankees fan, I would be very concerned that in fact, will happen.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
David Quinn, how you feeling, Coach? What's going on?
I feel pretty good. It was a frustrating stretch there when I had COVID and just laying on my couch watching hockey, but it's good to be back.
Let me ask you a question, Coach, because this is the line you get from coaches when they want a healthy scratch. You, well, maybe it'll do you some good to kind of watch from the press box and pick out some things that you maybe missed by playing. Was there anything you noticed? I know it was frustrating. I can only imagine. But were there any things you noticed just being able to take a step back from the bench and watching it on TV that you've kind of incorporated now that you're back?
Yeah, it was funny because I actually talked to Pete DeBoer because he went through it earlier in the year, the head coach of Vegas, and when I got diagnosed and then I was going to miss some time and some games, I just kind of called him to pick his brain on how he handled it, what he thought of the experience. And the first thing he said to me, he said, this is going to be a good thing for you. You may not realize it, but you're going to step back. You're going to see things a little differently. Never bad to have a team take a break from a coach in the middle of the season because you're around each other so much and you hear the same voice over and over again. And he was right. I mean, certainly things that when I was watching, and even before that, to be honest with you, we're kind of creeping to the halfway point, and I think everybody kind of self-assesses some of the things they can do better or differently at that point in the season. And, I certainly was doing that before I got COVID. It actually started with the second Bruins game when we lost 4-0. Then the next night we actually beat them 4-0, paid them back, beat them 4-0. And then, we lost that tough overtime game to the Flyers 5-4. And that morning was when Fox and Buchnevich were held out of the game because of COVID protocol. And then that's when the staff was, that's when I got diagnosed and the staff was held out for a week. So, there were things you certainly sit back and look at and, the feedback you get. And, I feel a lot better about the way things are going now.
I was thinking about you, and I think we talked about it on the show. I think if memory serves correctly, that first game that you were not there, didn't the team score like 9 goals? Was that game?
9-0.
I mean, were you, give me an honest answer. Were you at home thinking to yourself, all right, it's enough. Like save some of these or you don't have to win this game. I'm not there. Now you're going to win it 9-0. Did you have that moment of just win it 4-3 and don't beat them. Don't destroy them like they did.
Yeah, I mean, we're all human, right? I mean, you're sitting there going, Jesus, is it me? Do I need to sit on the couch for the rest of the season? I mean, that's the first reaction as you start piling goal after goal up, So without question, you start thinking, Jesus, maybe I have been the problem, So, but honestly, it was, you're just feeling so good for the players and we're in a situation where, that point, and even now, obviously, it's, where we were and where we are. I mean, every game's a playoff game. It's just that's the way it's been for 2 or 3 weeks now, and, we've responded.
So are we at a point now, I mean, with every game as important as it is, trying to, make this last push for the playoffs, are we going to start to see more, like, ride the hot goalie if it's Shesterkin, we're going to ride him like Seabiscuit down the stretch here?
Absolutely. To me, it's, you want to win hockey games, you want to make the playoffs. I mean, we're in that position where we're 5 points behind the Bruins. We play tonight, they play tonight, and we play them 2 more times. So, anything can happen in this setup because you play everybody. That's the good news. And, we like the direction we're going, where we like the way we've been playing. It's good to see that we've made this push and we put ourselves in this position.
Yeah, Coach, in saying that, I wonder because I kind of, you know, I like it, and I would imagine as a player I like it, you know, getting a chance to play the team, you know, multiple times. But how much harder is it to try to, like, you're trying to win every single one of these games, but it seems like when you play teams back-to-back, it's not as, it's not easy to win both of those games. Is it more challenging now because you're playing the teams, you know, in back-to-back games?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know that, Ricky. It's hard to beat a team twice in a row, and especially when you're in our division. With everyone in hockey thinks we've got the best division in the league, so it's difficult, boy. You know, you're playing the Penguins tonight. You know, beat them the other night, and it's going to be a grind tonight. And we actually play the Devils four in a row coming up here next week, which is just crazy. You know, so it does get more difficult when you play someone over and over and over again.
Head coach of the Rangers, David Quinn, joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I was thinking about you. I guess it was Saturday. How frustrated were you? You have the game against the Sabres first, and you let them tie the game up with like 3 seconds left. Then you win it in overtime, so I'm sure you're frustrated. But you got the 2 points, so you get out of there. And then the next time you play them, you have the lead again. 3 minutes to go, they tie the game, and you lose that on the 1 point. I mean, that's important, right? I mean, how frustrated were you not getting the 1 point against the Sabres in that game?
Yeah, it's huge. It's, something that we're still learning as a group. You know, we win the night before, and it was an overtime. But, you know, I think human nature, you have 47 shots. You spend, you know, double the amount of time in the offensive zone. You feel like, boy, we're so much better. And then every game's different. You know, it's just because you do that one night doesn't mean you're going to do it another. Every game's different. And I just thought we kind of dropped our guard a little bit against Buffalo. And, you know, it's something we're learning. You know, and I think – you know, the next night, Washington played the Devils, and they got outshot like 45-20. Washington did, and they ended up finding a way to win. So, I mean, human nature can kick in, but it's an NHL. Guys are in the league because they belong here, and I don't care what somebody's record is. You better come ready to play, or you're going to lose.
I got to be honest with you, though, Coach, watching a lot of these games, like, I mean, you guys have to be right up there top of the league of most games stolen by an opposing goalie. Like, it's amazing.
We've run into a situation where the other goalie has kind of, stolen some points. But you know what? I think at the end of the year, Ricky, it all ends up evening out. You know, but you know, we were talking about that earlier this week when early in the year we felt like we were playing our best hockey. You know, not our best. We were playing really good hockey early, and we just weren't winning. We were, you know, fluky things were happening, and so we're hoping that it all evens out by the end of the year.
Zibanejad, you know, there were so many conversations about is he not right because of the COVID or what's going on with him, and he was not scoring. And have we put that to rest? Is that something that we can no longer talk about?
Yeah, he's right now. I'll tell you that he's and you never know how this thing affects people. I mean, we all think we know. I mean, it's just everybody gets affected differently. It can linger with some and not with others, and you just never know. But boy, has he been good. He has been so good for about the last month plus, and, it's good to see him with a, you know, he was putting so much pressure on himself, too. He wants to win so bad, and he's such a great teammate, and, you know, there's just so many great things to say about him, and I'm just really happy for him that he's in the spot he's in right now, and happy for us.
Hey, Coach, how difficult is it, though? And again, I mean, I know the goal is always, regardless of the situation, is to make the postseason and compete for a Stanley Cup. But at the same time, you're still, I mean, you're one of the youngest teams. I think you guys are the youngest team in the NHL. Is it difficult sometimes where you're trying to juggle, okay, we have to win this game, but also trying to develop the young players at the same time?
Yes. It's just the reality of the situation. The other night we had 8 players, 22 or younger in the lineup. I mean,
that's crazy.
I had all the teams at BU, you know. So
you don't even recruit kids younger than 20 at BU.
No. I mean, I was laughing with Mike Hastings, who's the head coach of Minnesota State there in the Frozen Four, and he literally 4 of his centers were older than 3 of ours at one point. So, I mean, it's just the reality of our situation. And but our young kids continue to do a great job. They're great kids. They're coachable. And, you know, it's just the reality of our situation. I think it's a testament to our older players that we're in the situation we're in, and we're making this push.
Coach, when we had you on earlier in the season, I think you had the Islanders either that night or the next night. And I said, go out there and beat them 5-0. And you beat them 5-0. What do you want me to say for tomorrow night's game? What are you looking for?
Oh boy, I'm focusing on Pittsburgh. I know that's a coach talk, but
Well, give me a score. I'll throw it out there to the atmosphere so you can get the – how about 4-2 sound good?
4-2 sounds good. I'd like 5-0 again, but I'll take 4-2.
All right, go out there and how about that? I'm going to double up for you. Win this game tonight.
All right, I like that.
Win this game tonight at 5-2, tomorrow night 4-2, and we'll talk to you next week when you guys are rolling along.
I love it. Well, good talking to you guys.
You too. Feel good, and we're glad that you're back and joining us again.
All
Thanks
right.
so much.
Appreciate right. it.
Yep, great stuff. That's David Quinn. What's the matter? What do you
He puts me in such a tough spot. I mean, he's just such a tough spot.
Because you love him.
I love him. I don't know how I couldn't love him.
Because he's always
put me in a utility closet to get dressed at BU. I mean, that's just, I can't help but not love him.
Yeah, you love him. And that, of course, the David Quinn Report, powered by Mercedes-Benz of White Plains. Mercedes-Benz of White Plains can make your dreams of owning a luxury vehicle a reality. Stop in or they'll come to you for an at-home test drive that you can visit thepepiautogroup.com to shop all their luxury brands and the Macallan Double Cask 12-year-old single malt Scotch whiskey. Oh, great. They messed up. Let's make fun of it. The perfect balance of American and European sherry seasonal casks. Two worlds, one Macallan, imported by Edrington Americas. Please enjoy responsibly. I thought you were getting sent some reads today, no?
No, I never got any. I was going to help
you. Of course
you
didn't.
Whatever I can do.
I had no control over my bowels. Or apparently what I say. Because that would have been perfect for you. The David Quinn Report, you could have brought him in, shown your skills, done the read, the open, the close, the whole thing.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what, Quinny? I mean, I already told him. I mean, it would be tough for me to make that commitment to be on the Rangers coaching staff. But as far as like that one missing element that could kind of take you to that next level, I mean, you're looking at him.
Would you join the Rangers if they said, we need you to coach this team? Not head coach. What we need you is the goaltender coach for the Rangers. Is that something you would do?
Well, they're definitely not going to hire me to do that. They have the best goalie coach in the league. They're not going to hire me to do that.
You can't understand a hypothetical
question.
I'd be
doing them a disservice.
Oh, my God. All right. If they hired you as an assistant coach, would you take a job with the Rangers?
That'd be tough. That would be tough. I don't know how Islanders fans would respond to that.
Well, forget about what the Islanders fan wants or thinks. Would you, Rick DiPietro, to further your career, take a job as an assistant coach with the Rangers?
I see what you're doing right now. I know what you're doing.
I'm merely asking you a question.
You're trying to get rid of me.
You are freaking out about it is unreasonable. Would you take a job with the Rangers?
But that means that I can't do the show with you, so I'd have to leave you and then go do this.
How about if Coach approached you and said, listen, we want you to coach with us. We will make accommodations when you're on the road, set up the Comrex. You still do the show. It's an early show. You'll have plenty of time to continue along with your coaching and your show hosting duties. We want you that badly. We'll pay you really good money for an assistant job in this league. Will you come work with us?
See, it wouldn't even be about the money. You know how much I love coaching. I would have to seriously consider it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do you turn that down?
Now, how does it work out when you play the Islanders now? I mean, you are now public enemy number one. You are an Islander. You love the Islanders. You live on the island, and now you're going to be a Rangers coach?
I would almost have to recuse myself from that situation. I would have to take those games off.
Yeah, that would be very, very difficult for you. All right. Speaking of taking games off and days off, Aaron Judge, let's go back there. You know, you're a Yankees fan. You got to be beside yourself. Really. I mean, it's every team has their Achilles heel. And right now it feels like the only thing, we've seen this for years now, that is the Achilles heel of the Yankees is health. And already we're a couple days into the season. And the one guy that you are most concerned about, is he going to stay healthy or is he not? He's such a dynamic piece to this organization, is Aaron Judge. And Rick, we're right back where we thought we were going to be. And you've brought this up, and I think it's been good points. All the things that we've had concerns about, health with the Yankees, right, Glaber's defense, Mets bullpen, Mets defense, all these things have reared their ugly head in the first week of the season, but I think the one you have to be really concerned about right now for the Yankees is the health of Aaron Judge.
Because he's that important to your team. And mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know if I would overreact to what's happening right now. I think this is more just making sure it doesn't become a huge issue. But yeah, I mean, this is not something that going into game, you know, it was game six, when you have a day off today that you want to have to hear that a guy who's swinging the bat the way that Aaron Judge is swinging the bat needs a day off.
For you whatever say overreact, reason. But I don't think it's overreacting. There's a real track record here, and he's not playing the first week of the season.
No, I understand that. And again, I think you're right. I don't think this is just as simple as he has general soreness in his left side.
If you told me DJ LeMahieu had an ache on his left side and he'd be back Friday, I don't even think we're discussing this right now.
Well, see, I don't know if DJ LeMahieu is going to miss time with an ache on his left side. I think because he has the track record, I mean, where he's at in his career, he can't stay healthy, that the second he does feel something is, okay, we got to take a step back and make sure this thing gets back to where it needs to be before I risk blown out in oblique. Because, I mean, there's something to be said about, and I know no one wants to hear this, about missing, you know, two games as opposed to trying to push through and now doing something worse where you're missing, you know, weeks.
Sure. And we want to hear from the Yankees fan. 800-919-3776. Your, I guess, anxiety level right now. If you told me he's gonna he missed yesterday, gets the day off, back in the lineup Friday, fine. I find it very hard to believe that this is not going to be something that extends out through the weekend and maybe even more so.
Well, but that's the thing,
I find it difficult.
But that's the thing. That this is what happens, though, when you just say, you know, he's got, you know, general soreness in his side, and then he misses yesterday, day off, and then if he misses the following game, it's like, well, we know you were lying. This isn't just general soreness. There was something that happened. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm almost of the opinion you're probably better off just being more honest about the situation. Listen, he tweaked.
Honestly, because then people would be freaking out today. I mean, they are kind of anyway, but if he sat there and said he hurt his oblique, we don't think it's serious, but he's going to miss a couple days, people would be over the edge right now.
No, but if you explained it, like how I explained it, like, listen, he felt something in his left side. And the last thing we want to do is try to push him through game number six when we have, you know, a day off coming up where we can rest him for two straight days just to make sure that he's fine because we don't want him to rip up his oblique and now miss,
yep,
you know, a month of the season.
You think he plays tomorrow?
I don't know. I don't know how bad the tweak in his side was and how sore he is. Because if he's still sore, he's not gonna
well,
play.
Well, it's obviously been bothering him for days, right? Because they gave him the day off in right field and they put him at DH. So that was the beginning of this. And then he gets the day off yesterday. And I remember we talked about this, I think, off the air yesterday, that Jack Curry said that he was not running the bases well the night before. So this is obviously something that's been bothering him for a good couple of days now.
Here's the interesting thing, though, Dave, and this is something that I struggle with when I started to always get hurt, is that all of a sudden you start to try to do things differently. Like, the reason why they bring in Eric Cressy was because he wanted them to do things differently. Like, we're going to do more stretching, more pliability, more yoga. We're going to, you know, cut down on, you know, how many swings you take in the cage. But athletes are so neurotic with how they prepare. And if you prepare a certain way and you have success, that's the only way you want to prepare. Like, remember when David Wright hurt himself and he was coming back and he finally got back and he's like, I can't do what I used to do. Like, I can't sit in the cage and take, you know, 200 swings anymore. I can't get on the field and take, you know, 200 ground balls. I can only take, you know, 25 swings and I can only take 25 ground balls. Like, do you know how hard that is for an athlete to all of a sudden say, okay, because you never feel like, the one crazy thing about an athlete is you never feel like you've done enough. Like, for most athletes, if some is good, well, why wouldn't more be better?
More be better, right.
And that's when you start getting yourself in trouble. Like, I'm always like if I'm Aaron Judge and I had my 2017 where I hit the 52 home runs, well, I took this many swings in the cage, I did this, this, and this. But now I can't keep doing that because it's not conducive to me staying healthy. But in your mind, you're like, well, but I need that. Like, I need to do that much. Otherwise, I can't be the same player.
It's hard for people to change. I mean, it's hard for the normal person to change and realize that they're not able to do what they used to be able to do. For the athlete, I can only imagine. Let's go to some of the calls. 800-919-3776. Jimmy in Jersey City. Good morning, Jim.
Yo, Davey, what's going on?
What's up, Jimmy?
All right, so I see it already. It's coming. You know, the Yankees, the big dudes are going to get hurt again like they do every season. They're not going to hit with the runners in scoring position late down in the season. And I'm going to put myself through 145 games of thinking we got this. Late in the season, it's going to get tight, and ALCS will crumble again. You know, that's how it goes.
So you are very negative, and you're almost going to do a preemptive strike with your Yankees to not fall in love and have high expectations and watch it all fall apart in front of your face in October.
I'm doing the same thing I do with the Giants. I'm just trying to not get my hopes up early.
But the Giants stink, Jimmy. I mean, the Giants win like 3 to 6 games a year almost every year now. The Yankees are terrific, whether or not Judge is in the lineup.
No, this is true, but it's just that I relate Judge and Stanton to Yao Ming. They're too big to stay healthy. It's just they're too big. They're going to get hurt. They got to figure out something with these guys.
But they got to be managed, Jimmy. Those are players that have to be managed. And it sucks as a fan because you want to see them play every day because you know how good they are and how much they help your team win. But, I mean, that's where they're at, is that they're going to need, you know, more days off than other players. They're going to have to be handled differently. And right now you're in a spot where when injury is your big – because, like, when you put it into context, the guy hasn't stayed healthy. We haven't won a World Series. We haven't been back to a World Series. And going into the season, your biggest fear was, oh, no, I can't. We have to find a way to get through a season healthy. And now all of a sudden you're in game
six. We're a week into the season today.
Yeah, that's why everyone's freaking out about it.
I understand. I would be as well. Listen, it's three games, and I'm freaking out about the Mets' bullpen.
Well, because it's been awful.
Horrendous. Let's go to Alex in the car. Alex, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, what's going on, guys? First time, long time.
What's going on, Alex?
I've got the Mets' bullpen here. Obviously, it hasn't been great in the first couple of days.
Hasn't been great, Alex. Hasn't been great. I mean, come on.
But what can we do? I know Lugo's coming back, but like, I don't think that'll be enough. Obviously, we don't have any prospects thanks to our boy Brody. But what do you guys think we can do to bolster up that bullpen?
I'm hoping that Trevor May will figure it out. I mean, it wasn't
better.
His second appearance wasn't great. I mean, he worked himself into trouble, but he found his way out of it. I think Castro is going to be fine. It's just, you realize how important the bullpen is going to be this season. It really is. With how many innings you're going to try to cover, you're going to put a lot of stress on your bullpen.
Well, a couple things also. You're going to get to a point where Syndergaard comes back and Carrasco comes back, right? Which means that there are guys that are in your starting staff now which will go to the bullpen. Lugo is going to come back as well. So there are, at some point, reinforcements down the road, but listen, to watch this bullpen, it's been three games, and you just, every time they go to the pen, you're like, oh, God, here we go again. It's troubling. It's really bad.
Yeah, I don't know how you couldn't be concerned about it. I mean, unless you haven't watched the three games, yeah, of course you're concerned about it. I mean, yesterday was no different.
Yeah, but at least like you felt like the game was already lost. Like the bullpen lost game one.
Yeah, but they were still getting tons of opportunities, man.
I mean, know.
You keep it where it's at, you get one big hit, and it's a different ball game. As opposed to the second you come in, it's one swing. See you later. Game is
but
over.
They should be 2-1. They should not be 1-2 right now.
Well, yeah, just another Jacob DeGrom start wasted.
I can't believe they do this to the poor guy. He better see a therapist. He has to.
Well, he's just have to put the whole winning games. He has to put that out of his mind.
Yeah, but do you understand how think about this? If this was you. How emotionally damaging it would be to your psyche if you went out there and you allowed a goal every game and you lost every game 1-0.
I think I'm emotionally broken.
I mean, what more is the guy supposed to do?
No, it would be torture because, I mean, the reason why you play is to win. But at a certain point, I mean, Jacob DeGrom just has to focus on what he needs to do. And if the guys around him can't figure it out, then
well,
of course he does. They scored two runs and he was responsible for one of them.
I know, and he allowed none. He was dominant. All right, let's find out where we are, Santi. What are our three stars of the day?
Today's three stars of DCR, number three.
Well, before I even start, I just want to point out that I really do hope that this segment doesn't become a waste of time in your eyes like you did, like you kind of implied.
You know, you're putting words into my mouth. And obviously this has haunted you for the last hour plus. I didn't say Nobservations was a waste of time. I said the way it was being run today made it feel like it was no longer Nobservations.
This was an upper management decision.
You know what? If we're going to do it like that, let's just call it Observations, because that's what it was. Observations around sports.
Star number three, we're going to go back to where it began. It is the Thursday. Rick with the stellar open. I'm not even going to play it back because it was flawless. It might, dare I say, be the best open that we've ever had on this
show.
And I feel very strongly about that. Rick, give yourself a pat on the back, round of applause, whatever it is. It was fantastic. Great job out of you.
Just because you screwed up Nobservations, don't take it out on me.
Number two.
Star number two. Dave will appreciate this one. We finally have a Chris Canty drop.
Basketball is back.
Now you can quit asking for it. It's there. We have it. We can move on.
He sounds so confused. Yes, basketball is back. Correct. He's asking the question, and then he answers the question.
Number one.
Number one. You guys talked about continuity errors in movies, and the sports movies especially. Friday Night Lights, The Mighty Ducks. Things that irritate you. And now I'm really looking forward to just getting Rick irritated when it comes to hockey movies and things that don't make sense. So I'm really glad you brought this to my attention. I'm getting a lot out of it in future shows.
Run with it, Santi. Run with it. KJZ, more on Aaron Judge. It's Rule 76.
No excuses, Plague Champion. It's DPHO, Canty, Rothenberg, and
everybody.
on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.